So most religious traditions teach that there is some kind of life after death, that there's an undying part of us, a soul or spirit that goes somewhere. Those beliefs actually predate modern religion and even human history. Alan Kelleher is a sociologist who studies the psychology, science, and history of dying all the way back to the Stone Age. He told Steve Paulson that for tens of thousands of years, hunter-gatherer cultures have believed dying is a journey, which begins after death.
Many societies think about dying as not something that happens to the body, but dying as the annihilation of your identity. So the dying occurs post-death in most hunter-gatherer societies. If you look at their myths and legends across a whole range of human societies, you'll see that dying was something that occurred when you appeared in the supernatural world. In Fiji, for example, if you never married, there was a spinster god or a spinster monster, if you like, that would try to kill you on your journey towards heaven, if you like, or the perfect world. So your dying would occur post-death.
Why would that not be considered just the afterlife, something that happens after death? Why would that all be considered part of the dying process?
Well, in historical religions like Christianity or Hinduism and Buddhism or any of those kinds of recent historical religions, you can't really be killed in the afterlife.
Right.
It's only the hunter-gatherers who seem to think that the real dying, the annihilation of your personality, the cessation of your existence, occurs after your body has been destroyed. Now, that's a very peculiar take if you compare it with modern ways of thinking about dying. When I use the word modern, I mean since the last ice age, the last 12,000 years.
What's the evidence for how we know these things about how people thought about dying back more than 10,000 years ago?
Burial sites. And there's been an extensive study of grave goods all around the world. And not just goods that represent the grief of survivors, but also they're giving gifts to the dead to actually use. For example, spears.
you need a spear in the afterlife.
Why
right?
would you need a spear in the afterlife? Now, this suggests a set of beliefs about dying as a post-death journey, which ended in the real death 50, 100, 300 days after the destruction of their body. And that's fairly cross-cultural.
What would people need to do in this post-death dying process, this journey where it sounds like, they're on some sort of quest?
Yeah. Well, again, you've got to look at this kind of thing society for society. The Fijians have a different view of this to the Kalahari Bushmen, for example. They would have a different set of legends, different gods to dodge, different evils to worry about. So many hunter-gatherer societies are animists, and they believe there's life in the rock and the tree and the sky and the sun and the moon. And if you talk to the Australian Aborigines, they'll point to a tree and say, that was my uncle. That snake there was, my great-great-grandfather. So transformation, the idea of moving through different forms and that life is a cycle, is a widespread belief in hunter-gatherer cultures.
Well, one thing that's striking about this whole history that you've been talking about is there was an assumption that the afterlife was a given. Immortality existed regardless of what culture you're talking about. This modern idea that as we've come to live in more secular societies, that maybe everything just ends at the point of biological death. I mean, that's actually a radically new idea.
Yeah. Look, I don't believe the materialist view that in modern society we've moved away from religion. You look at any of the major surveys in the United States and Britain, you'll find high numbers of people have a belief in God or have spiritual beliefs that entail the afterlife, some private view of destiny and divinity.
I know you have spent a lot of time with people who are dying. Do they tend to have transformative experiences emotionally or spiritually in their final days or weeks or months?
Yes. I mean, some people have felt that odd things have happened. They've had mystical experiences. They've had strange lights in their room. They may be lying in bed and they get visit from a dead child or a dead parent or an old dead friend. They're called deathbed visions.
And these are common?
Well, in Eastern European and Asian studies we have suggests the prevalence is 1 in 3.
Wow.
The British studies we have suggest 1 in 10. And that's because I think largely we use a lot more opiates, and also the designs of the study are quite different. But some of the transformative experiences, and you use the phrase transformative experiences, some of these things come unbidden, which is to say you're not seeking them. You know, you work every day in radio or whatever it is you do, and you come home at night, and your life is pretty banal. You don't expect anything strange. You certainly don't expect to see your dead father coming to see you in the evening, right? You're not that kind of guy. I'm not that kind of guy. And you could say, well, maybe these are hallucinations. Well, maybe they are. But what the issue is that they are transformative. They're thought-provoking. They make you rethink what you think reality is. They make you rethink what you think you know about dying.
I have to ask, are you a religious person yourself?
I am not.
Would you describe yourself as having some sort of spiritual orientation?
I'm a maybe person. You know, the world is populated by people who say yes and no. And I'm an advocate for the maybes, or it's possible. Fundamentally, at the basis of this type of research into mystical experiences is the question of what we are as human beings. Nothing short of that question is what we're dealing with here. So anybody who thinks they've got the answer to that by 5 o'clock this afternoon is trying to sell you something. It's that simple, mate.
let me rephrase the question with perhaps a more pointed way of asking it. Given all that you've seen, all the people you've talked to, all these stories that you've heard, do you think consciousness can survive the physical death of the brain?
It may well do. That's my answer.
But, okay, let me press you on this. I mean, you've just told me these remarkable stories, these cross-cultural stories of these, these mystical experiences. Why wouldn't you believe that?
Well, because I also listen to my materialist colleagues who put up the objections, who trace the physiology of things, who make the argument that these are possibly subsets of hallucinations. They cannot be dismissed. So there is a balancing act in all good research. There's a balancing act. You need to look at the arguments for and the arguments against. I happen to think that there is sufficient evidence when you look at all the research as a whole, and I have looked at all the research as a whole. When you look at the research as a whole, there is evidence to suggest these are more than hallucinations. So what this gives me is a couple of things which are not very valued these days. One is openness. Two is optimism, that we may be more than our flesh.
So you would like there to be more than the flesh?
Yeah, I think I would. Yes, I don't think I'd like to go to the grave and rot. I'm quite prepared to do that if that's the way it is, if that's the way the universe works. But I just don't know enough to feel I could sell anything more than there is hope that there is more than we can see and measure.
Alan Kelleher is a medical and public health sociologist at Middlesex University in London. His books include A Social History of Dying and The Inner Life of the Dying Person. You can hear Steve's full conversation with him on our website at ttbook.org/death. Sign up for the podcast while you're there. I'm Anne Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio, NPRI, Public Radio International.